This is the Development Locker podcast, and this is your weekly investment in your development as you continue your transition through life and academy football. In season three, we bring you even more episodes, more guests who you can connect with, and even more insight into individuals like you who have a similar experiences in pursuing a career in the professional game. Over the next 11 months and 48 episodes, we aim to cover the key topics you will face along your journey. From the challenges you will have to overcome, the ups, the downs, and many experiences along the way. We will be here every week to discuss the current issues in your lives, support you in your journey, and continue your development to being the best version of you. In your interviews from the locker. This week's guest is a fellow Player Care Group graduate, but is someone who is actively changing the landscape when it comes to supporting academy players up and down the country. With a background in wellbeing, Simon Rogers is the ideal guest to have on in terms of supporting the mental side of performance and start to realise those marginal gains when it comes to unboxing your potential. Over the next 60 minutes, we discuss self-sabotage, antidotes, development first and assessment second, rocking the boat, dealing with adversity, and so much more. What we'll come across over the next hour is the passion Simon has, the level of knowledge he possesses, and the emotional understanding he has for you as players, having been one himself. But I've already said too much, so let's get to what you were here for and to this week's interview from the locker. Welcome back to the podcast, and we have another Simon, not the same Simon, a totally different Simon, and you'll get to know that over the next 50 or 60 minutes. So, Simon, as we always do on the podcast, start with the why. And in terms of the question I want to ask you is around tell us first of all about your background and why you feel the importance of the support platform that you're designing around football, around academy football. What's the reasons behind that?
Yeah, well, I had to start right from the beginning, and I'll try and give a little bit of a whistle-stop tour through it. But essentially, I love playing football. I love playing football as a young kid. And I'd probably describe myself as a bit of a sensitive soul. So I found that playing football, you know, playing that game within the white lines, it was a way for me to express myself, feel even more comfortable in my skin. Some things that I kind of didn't show of myself, or didn't feel comfortable to show of myself, like outside of the pitch, I could do that on the pitch. I felt powerful. I felt like I was part of a team. I could create things. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I loved being me. I really enjoyed being myself, more so on the pitch than and in training than I did in other things. And it was just, that was so obvious to me. So that was that, you know, when you enjoy things, you learn very quickly and you get better at things very quickly because it's trial and error, every bit of learning. And before I knew it, I was at a Premier League academy, scouted, and when I was playing there, my experience of being there, and this is 25 years ago, so I'm giving away my age, was that ultimately I didn't enjoy it. I really struggled to enjoy it. I felt like there was constant assessments that weren't being shared with me. There were constantly people looking at me and I wasn't hearing what they were saying. And it took it away from that internal experience of enjoying expressing myself and showing my potential. And I kind of silently just dreaded it, hated it, and I was relieved when I finally left about 18 months later. And nobody would have really got that feedback from me because I just kind of went into my shell instead of expressing myself. That was something that really lived with me. And I suppose one other relevant part of that is that I love playing football, and also my granddad did as well, and my dad did. And so there was a shared passion there that I also love, that, you know, being able to share that experience with them. But they also had ambitions that they didn't live out fully themselves. And being sensitive, I kind of picked those up. They didn't talk about it necessarily, and they did. It's more of a feeling. So I kind of absorbed that. And I used that as a kind of feeling of, oh, if I can achieve this, I can make them happy. But it wasn't an obvious thought pattern in my head. It was kind of like in the background. But it did lead to me kind of going away from myself and not really considering as clearly, like, what really do I enjoy in that kind of academy process? I need to do it for them as well. And I wasn't clear on that, but that was definitely happening. So you can imagine now, you know, this is 11, 12, 13 years old. So it's pretty young, but there's a lot going on there and a lot that's not clear. So anyway, fast forward into where I am now, what the kind of stops have been along the way is that I had a fascination outside of football with just how we work as humans, you know, how our bodies work, how our minds work, how can we actually enjoy being ourselves and you know, function society, bring value to other people. And my first kind of professional role was I studied physiotherapy. So it was kind of matching up, helping people to get back in using their bodies, having fun, enjoying it, away from the pain. So it wasn't necessarily a fascination of the pain. It was more of, you know, what could you do once it was solved? That really took me on like a decade-long deep dive into understanding the body. I became a lecturer as well, and also studied osteopathy. And by the way, this was actually in Holland and in Belgium, where it's a little bit more kind of, the word holistic is a bit overused, but it's really looking at the person a bit more as a whole, and also very specifically into like what's going on in the body, not necessarily tying into the NHS, you know, it's really going a deep dive into what's going on there. So as I was working with many, many clients, I worked in private practice, I've seen up to 20 clients. I say clients at the time, they're called patients, but I don't like that word patient, because it's kind of disempowering for the individual, at least that's the way I see it, is that you see a lot of pattern, you know, it's a lot of patterns when you work with a lot of people. And I realized that within that medical model, in terms of what I wanted to support people with, really to unbox their potential, not just to solve the symptom of the pain, but actually to get back and enjoy doing what they wanted to do. You know, that's a different thing. That's more than overcoming, you know, the suffering of the symptom, is actually, you know, getting to the root issue, getting close to what was going on in people's hearts and minds just as much as in their bodies. And you know, I realized that I didn't have the skills and tools to meet people at that level at that time. I had the willingness, the openness to do it, the curiosity, but not the skills. So I decided I want to study coaching, like professional coaching, not football coaching, but professional coaching, like how the skills of being present, asking questions, listening. And on that note, Lee, are you still with me?
I'm still with you. I'm listening and frantically writing down plenty of notes. So please do carry on.
This is a chicken. So at that point, you know, I really, you know, to help people move forward, unbox their potential. There's quite a lot of interference that gets in the way, but it's not actually, it's all stuff that they've got in their own heads. And it often leads to like mental health challenges, and often leads to physical health challenges. What I noticed working with, ultimately, it was thousands in the end of patients at the time. That, you know, one of the biggest things that was the heart of it was actually the emotions, the emotional space that they didn't know how to navigate. I noticed that people, and I knew it was true inside of me as well, that it's easier to be with thoughts in your head. It's easier to be with physical sensations in your body, like pains, than it is with the emotions. And it sounds so simple, but, you know, that's the space that we don't necessarily take time to deep dive into, and we kind of sugarcoat it, sweep it under the carpet, just fly over it. But that's where the good stuff is. That's where the change really happens. And And so that's what I found when working with clients, is that, you know, it's about looking at that stuff. It's about the emotional intelligence. But beyond that, to get to kind of the start of what I was talking about, that's what I needed as a little boy. I needed to do that for myself. I needed to look at, you know, am I actually doing this for me? And maybe I would have been able to find if I was doing it for me, if I'd have let go and seen, you know, the obligations that I'd taken on. Because without that, I was actually self-sabotaging. I was sabotaging the process. And I didn't really believe in myself because I wasn't really connected to what I really wanted, even though I was at a Premier League academy. I was more connected to, yeah, what do you want to see from me? Firstly, from my granddad and my dad. But that people can see that from the outside as well. They can see that you're not, you know, you're not really there for you. Might call it a different thing.
Going back to that point there made about, you know, am I actually doing this for me?
Yeah.
Is that a self thing, or did you, you know, I don't want you to throw people under the bus or name and shame, but did you feel that externally, or was that an internal thought process that subliminally nobody actually said those words to you, like, come on, son, you need to be, you know, doing better, or come on, grandson, you need to be doing this, or your coach, or whoever it may be. Is that pressure you put on yourself, or is that something you subconsciously felt from the outside, or is that something literally people were telling you that, you know, impacting on, oh, you've got a great chance in the academy now, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, and they were almost physically but metaphorically with their words impacting and making you feel that, I you know, are you actually doing this for you? Which way was it? Or was it a combination of all of those things?
Well, I think, you know, in terms of the context, there's a combination of lots of that, but and of course, it's a long time ago, it's 25 years ago. Things are very different. And also my memory of what happened might not be actually exactly what happened. But based on what I do remember is that I was a very shy kid at the time. And I remember that. I don't remember having many conversations with the coaches at all, you know, other than simply on the pitch and giving guidance on technique. And even that was quite minimal. So there weren't conversations. I don't remember one conversation except for when I didn't get a contract, where it was actually connecting me, like connecting with me, or willing to connect with me, was my experience, right? Doesn't mean it definitely was that. And I know things have really moved on. There are far more people working, connecting. In it, player care didn't exist right then. It didn't exist. And so, you know, it's not that it's only player care's responsibility or their kind of duty of care, but I think the coaches in general weren't, in society in general, we weren't really equipped or certainly as conscious of being aware of, you know, the emotional experience, so even in ourselves, so therefore you're less likely to facilitate it for another. And I would also say that it wasn't direct conversations. It was more what I felt, so what I picked up. So my interpretation of what was happening around me, what people meant by things, not necessarily just in words, but actions and what I picked up from the outside. So, yeah, I think, does that answer the question, Lee? Or is that
it does. And I think it shows there's no simple answer. There's no simple way. Sometimes things aren't actually said in words, but we do have to be careful. When I say we, I mean everyone. I mean, you know, teammates, parents, support staff, internal, external organisations, of how we communicate, or even our body language, our facial expressions, of being careful or aware of what we're giving off, because we may not actually say those words, but we're quite clever. We know how to kind of convey a thought or an opinion in a way without saying the actual words we want to say. You know, we live in that day and age now where, you know, we all have to be careful of how we communicate. But it's interesting that I think it does show the complexities and all the different levels of variables. And surely you must have definitely taken all of those on, and about the platform you've designed as a result of your experience, your own experiences and experiences of others in academy football. Tell us a little bit more about that, the you know, the Enjoy Being You platform that you've designed, which is going to be kind of operated within a, you know, a player care kind of universe, and how you feel that's going to help unlock some of our listeners' potential.
Yeah, absolutely. So Enjoy Being You is obviously the antidote to the kind of the problems that I've articulated to a degree, and is that I think that's the pinnacle. It's the pinnacle of high performance is being able to enjoy being you, like deeply the experience of being you. So in that way, the process of being there is unboxing your potential. So that's essentially, you know, what the program I developed does, the workshop, and also the work that working directly with academies is to support that. So it's using a foundation of well-being as a platform for high performance, which I think is the way to the highest level of performance. If people feel absolutely comfortable in their skin and express themselves, there's no interference to their potential. And even if it looks like there's a high performance, usually there's some level of interference that's in the way of them expressing more potential. So there's always that, you know, that that aspect of well-being. Often they're seen separate, but actually it's completely the foundation for high performance. So that's in essence what it's about.
Okay, that's good. And then in terms of you putting that together, is, and this is a very rhetorical question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, is that purely based on your experiences of others? How did you come to, because we've had previous podcasts with not the same platform by no means or any stretch, it's the same, but similar platforms, similar supportive tools, things of that nature. And I'm very intrigued of how you come to those strategies, those processes, those kind of procedures that, you know, some people choose five core elements, others go, well, it's eight. Yeah. How did you come to kind of, you know, the name of it? How did you come to the processes that kind of underpin that so that you can, you know, do the job you're passionate about supporting academy players through that process?
Yeah, well, essentially it was seeing the challenges that I experienced, but also then hearing from other people, having conversations and understanding like what is actually going on now, you know, how is the structure within academies and football in general? And I've always followed that, really being curious about it. And what I realized is that we could be so much more proactive, that we can allow and have more confidence to meet people more emotionally and have a greater depth to allow that to be proactive. So so that actually in terms of aftercare, there'll be less work. So this is something that can be done with individuals at YDP and PDP level, that the focus is actually high performance, but the foundation of it is well-being. So it's already going to help with, you know, if this isn't going to be the right path going forward into the club or to another club or even going to a career, you know, they have those skills, resources inside themselves to feel confident to be able to do that and to make that transition and have those open conversations about it as a consequence of actually being able to look into themselves. So this is something that I presented to a contact of mine who was working at Premier League Academy in recruitment, actually, and he said about the transition points was one of the things that he really noticed that mindset work would be really useful for, because there's this, yes, a moment that's uncomfortable, it's hard to deal with, they're usually on the fringes of things, either, you know, a team that's already integrated or they want to make a level up into a scholarship. And he said that this is the place where I see that there's a real need for it, that's not really, you know, that there are gaps within his experience in academies. And I decided I would make a program, a 12-week program, to go through different themes that were relevant, taking this from insights from lots of people working within the game, and using my own experience with all that kind of professional experience and understanding yourself, and put it together. I also created a model that is kind of the epicenter of the whole process, which the intent is, and what I've seen working with case studies and with clients, is that they can come back to that model as like a visual. A lot of people are quite visual learners, and it shortcuts the whole process, which is actually something that they have inside of themselves. They don't need to be reminded by their parents or even me about it. It's something that they have embodied. It's something that they can tap back into whenever they're, you know, the phrase usually is when your head's gone, that and they're off their performance, that they can do a reset. And it's a reset that they can do in milliseconds on the pitch. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I knew, you know, being at high level performance in football, you have to have something that makes that transition in milliseconds, because otherwise you just won't do it. You'll just go back to your default, your trusted path, which you're pushing through to get to a performance. But that exhausts your energy and also can lead to mental health challenges potentially, or certainly just not acknowledging, you know, yourself. It's going to be something that drains you over a period of time.
Oh, so true. In some of your research you probably would have done, and in your experiences, is there an athlete out there, and it doesn't have to be solely in football or academy football, and who is the epitome, is the shining example of someone who unlocks their fullest potential, that you're aware of, somebody who you may reference in some of your work with your clients at the moment, or that you would do with any future clients?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many examples. I think one that's like very, very topical at the moment is Harry Kane, and it's quite an obvious one, but obviously he's had lots of points where if he was to focus externally on messages from outside, like being sent off to on loan, I think he was voted by Spurs as the worst ever first team player or something like that at some point very early on in his career. You know, if he listens to those, it's unbelievable that he's now England's record scorer. He clearly doesn't. And I think he was interviewed after that game and just said, you know, what is the trick, if you like? What can you share with the young people? And it was, you know, self-belief was one of those things, hard work and self-belief. Really simple message, but the embodiment of self-belief and the application of it, it does require you to do a deep dive in yourself, and hard work helps you with that because you really see yourself. There's no other distractions. You can't have interference when you're really applying yourself. And so you do make that deep dive when you apply yourself. They come in hand in hand. You can do it proactively as well. But what I'm saying is with that model is that you can do it in the moment with far more ease, far quicker and effectively with less energy. And that's what I'm really passionate about, sharing with more people, allowing people to have more access to it, because you make your dreams happen then. It starts with that self-belief. It starts with inner experience. So the better you are at diving into that, getting clear on it and weeding out, letting go of all of the things that are interfering with that, you being in a flow, like a flow hack, I think you do. And I think Harry Kane, although he doesn't talk about the inner dynamics, he does give you a really clear pointer as to what it is that makes a difference for him.
Yeah, that's a great example, that one, because I was looking at, I don't know who the author of the original tweet, but I know he was doing the rounds midweek with the England games being on, of, you know, people questioning his record and his goal scoring, because obviously he's broke Wayne Rooney's goal scoring record for England. And, you know, people are putting, rightly or wrongly, into context, going, well, you know, the majority of his goals he scored against, you know, Lithuania, Slovenia, and then the remaining goals, you know, these were penalties. And yeah, it's still, like you said, he's had his critics, and to still be where he is, you know, and when I say where he is now, I don't just mean, you know, from a Tottenham Hotspur perspective, but, you know, maybe he will break the Premier League goal scoring record. If he does that, and he's broken the England one, and he's going to smash the England one, because let's be honest, he's going to be playing for England for a good few years yet. But yet people will still doubt him. But yet he certainly doesn't listen to those people, and he just carries on And yeah, he, I think he has publicly gone, said on record, hasn't he, about how he never feels as though he's, you know, this, that, the other. And maybe those loan periods, maybe those constant knockbacks have made him so kind of bloody-mindedness into who he is today, and not listening to the naysayers from external, and just keeps doing what he does, and he scores goals, and he will do, I'm sure, for seasons to come. It's a great example, that one, a great example.
Yeah.
Do you feel, so away from, because we all can't be Harry Kane, unfortunately, do you feel we all possess the ability to unlock our fullest and our true potential? And I ask that because, yeah, we talk about it here within the academy that I work for, and sometimes you ask that and you think, you know, we were talking off air about the perspective and the relevance and the different levels. You know, in the best world of the world, I could probably train, you know, 7 days a week, 8 hours a day, and probably still not be anywhere near as good as you from a football perspective, because you made the academy system. I never did. But do we all have that ability to really unleash our truest potential, or is it always going to be factors in the background that are going to prevent us from fully getting there? So whether that be upbringing, whether that be social economical, whether that will be a mindset thing, or you very much know everyone can unlock their truest potential, and maybe it's your, not job, but your platform will help them do that. Is that how you see it, or do you, have you come across people you think actually they're probably never going to reach their full potential? That unfortunately is going to be a harsh reality.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think it's a case of, I always believe in development first and assessment second. Assessment's a necessary part of academy space, but your first role is always development, and it's always the decision. You're only facilitating the other person, the young person, to, you know, decide for themselves. Like in my case, you know, I wasn't really facing up to what I really wanted, like deep down what I really wanted. I had never actually imagined myself being a professional footballer. I just loved playing the game. And when the culture, as it was showing up, as I experienced it, gave me a resistance of like not enjoying the game, then I let it go ultimately. But I felt guilty because I felt that I knew I was disloyal to my parents and to my granddad, right? But I didn't acknowledge that. I didn't face that in myself. Now, I'm not saying that that's the same for everybody else. I'm just saying that it's, I think if you're going to unleash your potential, you have to acknowledge everything in yourself. You have to really get clarity and be connected with what you really want. And the pinnacle of that is that you feel an experience of, I love this. I enjoy it. I enjoy being me. So now the enjoyment of what your ambition is merged with the experience of you. I think then you give yourself the best chance to be able to develop. And I think that anybody who's working with young people is to facilitate a space where they can find that as easily as possible. And I think that's really, you know, I've recently been watching Ted Lasso. I'm a bit late to the game with it. But he much of like the start of the first season is, you know, just working on creating an environment, a culture, a space where people can feel like they can enjoy being themselves and express themselves. And then the results happen. And I think that's, you know, it's a little bit idealistic in some ways, because you have to just work with a culture where it's at and the point where that person's at. But when you meet them where it's at, the intent needs to be development and facilitating a space. I don't think there's really, it's anybody's role other than the individual to make an assessment on it if they can or can't do something, because you don't want to put more interference in there. They need to highlight their own interference, to be self-aware, make that self-assessment themselves. You can facilitate it, but you have to be at a place where you're really have their best interests at heart, rather than trying to guide them to an answer that you already think in your head. And then, you know, through that, they can trust what's the right thing for them. And some cases, in many cases, actually, you know, it's becoming a professional footballer may not be the right thing for them, even if they're in academy. But they have to come to that conclusion themselves. Otherwise, there's going to be broken dreams. There's going to be broken identities that's just going to like collapse and but they haven't explored beyond it. And this is where the heartbreak happens. And I think there's so much that preventatively can be done when we focus on, you know, unboxing your potential, of really tapping into your potential. If we 100% go for that, I think so much is done proactively. And in the process, you create the people that are at the highest level of their performance. And that means they go into the first team, they go off to another club and they have a success there, or they have the best awareness of resources inside themselves to navigate adversity and also figure out what's right for them. Or they go off into another career path, or there may be other routes, but they, either way, there's a degree of acceptance there that they really are doing what's right for them. There's not a kind of regret that happens there. And I think there's so much that we can do there. And I'm really passionate about providing that space and facilitating that space for individuals and also organizations to facilitate that for their young people.
You mentioned organizations there. Mm. And we've all been, and it's not to say that all organizations are the same in sport, certainly not in football, mm. especially not in academy football, but for those players who find themselves in a culture where they feel, so you said about you didn't feel like you're being listened to in academy football, that's obviously your yeah. experience, it's time bound. It's not to say all your teammates felt the same.
No.
But for those individuals who listen to this, where they're thinking, okay, right, yeah, unleashing my potential, yeah. I just don't think I can do that in the environment I'm at now, or the club yeah. that I'm at now. How do they get around that, get over that? Is that purely through perseverance? Is that purely through a bit of the Harry Kane example of just becoming bloody-mindedness and sticking to their own process? Or is that just banging your head against a brick wall if that coach is not going to facilitate that unboxing your potential?
Well, I think ultimately it does come down to the individual, right? So a culture is there to facilitate at best you to become self-aware and trust yourself and to have that self-belief. But it does ultimately come down to the individual. And so anything that takes away from that responsibility is not actually supporting the individual. They have to be able to do that. But it's not being told to do it. often the big invisible space is the emotions that are there. You know, often we can be scared of rocking a boat from the outside. And also, it's hard to see somebody in pain when you care. But often through working with adversity, there really is a strength of character that comes through it. But you can't do that just through mental resilience, because it's not just what your thoughts are. It's the feelings beneath that. I think that's a space that generally in society, we don't like to go to, right?
Yeah, true.
It's uncomfortable. It's vulnerable. It's challenging. It's uncertain. It's so easy to feel like you're doing something wrong there. But I think the big issue is that we want to go in with fixer mode. We want to solve it. You know, it's a fixer mode. It's a typical kind of file it into a... I think somebody said to me yesterday, I had a conversation about the difference between a male and a female's mind. And this was his words, not mine. But he said that in terms of emotional processing, it's more like spaghetti. For women and for men, it's more like a waffle, you know, so it's got these compartments in it. And I thought that's quite an interesting way to see it. It's obviously very stereotypical. And not to stereotype, he was from Texas, very kind of traditional kind of mindset, but very a lovely guy. And, you know, that sometimes we are, you know, when we are looking to be of service to people and look after people, sometimes we're a little bit too much of wanting to get to a solution for them, but actually they need to sit in that uncomfortableness, but navigate it as best as possible. I think it takes a lot of really kind of basic human skills of being able to listen, stay there and lean into your own discomfort, that empathy, and give them some clear parameters of like a space and as well in that. And my program is, you know, that's basically the intent of it, is to create a safe space for them to explore, to feel, yeah, to feel uncomfortable, but for the purpose of growth, very direct, for the purpose of growth, higher performance, and to feel more settled in themselves so that they feel that they can express themselves, connect better with people in their team, but in the rest of their life as well. I think that that is well-being, and that leads to high performance. So that kind of, does that make sense as a linking together?
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And yeah, the links, I'm just trying to get my head around the spaghetti and the waffle bit.
Yeah, the spaghetti and the waffle.
That one, but yeah, yeah, that's a great visual bit. That obviously he's been had A, a lot of time on his hands, and B, I'm just trying to picture as he had those food products on the same plate, and he's just been like, oof, hang on, this represents, no, I don't know. And maybe I'm thinking way too much into that one, but yeah, I'll leave that for another day. But yeah, in terms of then achieving, you know, high performance, unboxing someone's potential.
Yeah.
And apologies to put you on the spot, but unfortunately, I'm still going to do it. Is do you feel that the mental side of things, the mental strength, is the key performance indicator, or the contributor, as it were, as opposed to the physical and the technical strengths of the player? What's your opinion? Can you put a number of percentage on it? Is it, you know, 60-20-20? Is it different, you know, different balances? Are you even able to put a number on it, or are you going to be probably like me and sit on the fence and go, it all depends on the individual?
It does depend, but I will say this, because I don't think you can put a figure on it unless there's research done on it, and then you can go, like, you know, you can say that with any real obvious confidence. So I can only say that I genuinely believe that it is the next big marginal gain in football. And I'm talking about, you know, when you say mental, I would say that a biggest neglected part is the emotional part, is the flow hacking in it. And if you can really do flow hacking, so really in the zone, in your moment, enjoying the experience, if you're incorporating the emotional part. You can't just do it through a mental part. They are very different, mental and emotional. They impact each other constantly, but it's often neglected. Like, an easy way to say it is that mental space is thoughts in terms of pictures and words that happen in your head. So it's information. Whereas the emotional part is sensational experiences being expressed through your body. It actually happens in your body, not in your head. So it's energy being expressed through your body, and you notice shifts in energy as sensational experiences happening in your body. Now, that's a very simple thing, but a lot of us don't actually notice sensational shifts in our body. If I said, like, something feels heavy or lighter, or you get a tingle here or a little buzz or whatever, then you recognize it, right? And that's what I'm talking about, is that. But consciously recognizing those shifts makes it so much easier to do these quick resets, deeper dives, and getting to well-being and high performance in one. And that is, I genuinely believe that is the next big marginal gain in football, not just academy, in football throughout.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you on that one. I think that's why I asked the question, because I don't think enough is probably, you know, we all talk about, you know, we're all guilty of it, technical, tactical, physical strength. You can see it, you can record it, you can evidence it. But the emotional, I mean, I'm not even talking about the emotional side, I'll be honest, but from the mental perspective, because it's a lot of the time in internal thoughts, you don't necessarily see it, maybe until emotionally they're displaying that physically in a challenging way. That was the reason for me asking that question. But I'd totally been kind of not disregarded, but not even thought about kind of the emotional intelligence, the emotional regulation, that side of things. So yeah, I don't doubt that will be the next big marginal gains in the sport, and specifically within in youth football. And I suppose kind of going on to the youth football bit, and that's the predominantly the listeners who we have on this podcast. Do you feel then that, and this is not a chance to big you up, and I know you're not trying to get a position, I'm assuming not just in one academy, but do you feel that because of those things we just talked about, does there need to be, and apologies for getting the terminology wrong, a mental coach, someone like yourself, whatever title you want to give it, who's going to be bringing these marginal gains? Is that what you feel would be critical in every academy? So we have head of sports science, head of coaching, head of education, player care. Is that the next big thing then? Is that where we need not just a psychologist or the two distinct different things, a mental coach or a different title? Do you feel that's what every academy needs moving forward now? If we're really going to be proactively caring for our human beings who just happen to be academy players through their journey and then even after that journey?
Yeah, I do. I personally do think that is a separate department in itself. I think the best match is with player care. But I think that, you know, the ideal situation is all the departments working together, right? And I think that player care has always attempted to do that, and with varying successes, depending on the different structure of it. But it's a new department, it's a new kind of profession. And then this area is even newer. I do think it's going to be one that helps everything knit together and work proactively together. Because even with a sports psychologist, it's a perfect match, right? It's working, sports psychologists will really work with high performance, and they'll work with the mental side of things, like what you're thinking and the beliefs, etc. So to frame that at the top level, this is then also working on the deeper dive, particularly the emotional space, the emotional intelligence, but more so the emotional agility, which is different to emotional intelligence. How you being, not just the content of what you're thinking, how you're thinking about that, how you're feeling, in fact. And so I think it works perfectly interlinking not just the player care, not just medical. Obviously, my background is medical. I understand how it links together. But also in recruitment, and particularly the coaches, because actually that's one of the start points of discussing things with the potential working with mindset in football and in academies, was a lot of need of coaches saying, you know, I'm dealing more and more with the issues of emotional kind of flare-ups, whether that is this player and this young person is a disruptive influence on the group, or it tends to be, or they're kicking off about this, or they're sulking, or they're just hiding. They're all emotional issues, in fact, right? And then the framing of how they're thinking about it, but ultimately it's at the heart of it, these are emotional issues. And there's not as much time spent on that as coaches, and they probably in moments feel like they're not equipped to work with every single situation like that, or they're willing to grow and see how they could develop and support them even more to be of, you know, ultimately to develop them even quicker and more effectively as great players, right? And so this is I really see a huge potential of working together with all of these departments. I think that mindset in general is something that can facilitate and lubricate a lot of progress in areas that are, you know, already great work has been done.
Yeah, I suppose that's the key. I think a lot of the times we do all kind of get not bogged down, but yeah, I think it's a very good point you made there. We all kind of go, right, yeah, my role is, this is my lane, these are my responsibilities, this is what I need to look after, take care of, design, implement, when I think you've again hit the nail on the head of like, well, it should just be complementing, it should be lubricating, kind of seamlessly being within, you know, working and collaborating with all those different departments, individuals in it, rather than just like, oh, right, oof, we don't really do emotional control or regulation or emotional intelligence. Oh, we'll employ someone for that. We'll make a title for that. That's your area. You box that off. It doesn't work, does it, if it's disconnected? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's another great point. Talking of the future of academy football and kind of around the mental coach role, if that's even a title, they, and this is me assuming again, maybe incorrectly, but from what I'm hearing from you, it is all about the individuals. Therefore, any program, strategy, whatever you want to call it, the work you will do with a client or an academy player in this instance would need to be individual. is that even possible in an organization like an academy with 125 plus players from under nines all the way through to the under 21s, who, you know, they may be two or three, a handful of overage players, so they may be a little bit older than 21. Is that even possible to be able to design and implement a individual program for all of those players along their football journey?
That's a great question. I think it is currently very, very hard to do that for a number of reasons. I think the challenges being is that ultimately to have real depth in it, yes, you do need to work with them individually, or you've got to facilitate a space where there's greater vulnerability and comfortable being vulnerable in a group, right? So that you can work with groups. My program does both. It can do both, okay. But it's ideally, you know, currently there is one of me working in my business. So, you know, there's a possibility of then bringing on more people to have whole departments. But again, it's still a limitation. So one of the things that I'm thinking of in terms of making it more accessible to more people is also creating a program that can be done in isolation for an individual as well. Right. It might not have quite the amount of depth as if you're working one to one, but it will be, you know, a stepping stone towards that. So it allows it to be more accessible then for, you know, a number of age groups across all of the development phases as well. So there are a number of different ways of finding solutions to them, and they're absolutely possible to find solutions for. But I think it comes from ultimately the value being seen in the work, to really work on the individual and put the person first to create high performance.
Yeah.
And we all know that that is essentially, it seems idealistic, but it is that we know that creates high performance. We see that in all high performance teams. And even when you were saying about in academies, sometimes it's a case of boxed up, you know, structure, but ultimately you're a team.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, whether or not it feels like that, you are a team. And so there will be knowledge of like, well, if only we could feel more connected, we could all feel like we're, you know, contributing on all of these tasks together, you know, that will be felt by many individuals within that structure. And so there will be, you know, that would be the ultimate. And that's the same working with any age group as well. And I think that, you know, I think we're realizing that to create the best level of performance, you can't compartmentalize. No. You can't compartmentalize yourself away from it. You have to put all yourself into it.
Yeah.
So playing football and expressing yourself is vulnerable. It is vulnerable. You're just not aware of it. And I think that you can, when you play and you have fun, vulnerability is just strength, right? That's the ingredient that creates that. And if you can create that in a culture, you can create that in a group, then you can work at a depth that has massive impact with a huge number of people in one go.
Sounds perfect. So where do I sign up? No, I'm just but in terms of, and you talked about earlier in the episode about losing the enjoyment, you felt like you weren't being listened,
yeah,
and you're not alone on that one, which I'm sure isn't a surprise for you to hear that. It seems to be a little bit of a trend at the moment of, you hear quite a few players, or I certainly do, of not enjoying it anymore, especially when they come to the later age groups and the PDP phase. How, for those players who feel like they're losing the joy, how do you regain this? Can you even regain this? Because going back to your earlier point about, you know, it's a result orientated. I know your philosophy is about the development first before the assessment, but we know in reality, and it's the system, it's not the individuals within it, where, yes, that's great, but with all the best will in the world, it's a very few academies are going to be like, okay, we've not really produced any players, but look at all these great human beings who have left our organization and gone on and done fantastic things in the wider world. We both know that ultimately, really, academies will be judged on what players have you produced for the first team, or which players have you produced similar to Liverpool's, whether it's a preconceived strategy or approach of producing players to then sell on to reinvest, mm-hmm. you know, somewhere in the organisation. Where can a player regain that love for the sport, and is it even possible to do that in a sport where it is so results driven, so assessment orientated than purely down to development?
Yeah, I think you're kind of going to deconstruct the question a little bit for the sake of being able to share a bit more.
Yeah.
So I don't think necessarily that it's a case of creating, you know, if you focus on this, that you're only creating great people. Mm. I think if you create great people, you give them the best possible chance to achieve in whatever they want to achieve in. Right. So if you look at it from that start point, yeah. They will do and they will achieve more. So somebody who was always, let's say we have a time machine and we can go and say like a certain number of people are going to go into the first team, certain number of people going off here. And we kind of know that from experience, but we don't know that for that individual that we're working with right now. Right. So let's say that there's two that are going to go into the first team out of an age group. It might even be one, it might even be none. And let's say there's the one from this age group. Now, actually working with them proactively on this will increase their chances of having even higher level of performance going into the first team earlier. So it's not saying like, oh, they're going to go off into another route. It's actually working on every single one, whether they're going to go off into a first team, whether they're going to go off into another club and a different journey through football, or if it's going off into another career and becoming the best version of themselves, best dad, best other career they're going to do, you know, they're going to be better at that. But I think the kind of myth is that to work on this stuff means that there's going to be less people that are going to push themselves in high performance. And that is, I think, the myth that needs to be busted. Blown apart, because it comes down to how much you as an individual decide to apply yourself in the moment, right? And so that is not just a conditioned thing from the outside of you just being told you have to. I think the highest level of performance, if you look like at what Gareth Southgate's doing with the England team,
yeah.
It's not because he's constantly insisting on a culture of fear of you need to be able to do this, guys, this is England, don't let people down. He's not saying those things. He's saying quite the opposite. Everything is to facilitate a place where they feel like they can be at their best. And he trusts then that that leads to performance. And if they're not seeing that, and if he needs to challenge that, then they have a direct word about it. But it's not through going, you start performing or you're gone or whatever. It's not about that. And I think that's one of the things that I think we're in football, it's used a lot of kind of fear in the past to get results, and it's had varying successes. But what I'm saying is the highest level of performance is to be brutally directly honest that meets them where they're at, but it's not inducing them to eke out a performance, an outcome through fear. You can use fear and adversity to create greater awareness for choice and self-trust, but not to drive somebody into an outcome based on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's yeah. The more people you speak to, like yourself, and the more episodes that you do, preconceived ideas, you think you're going to get closer and closer to, not a solution, because I don't think there's ever a solution, but clearer mind, clearer thought process. But I think the more and more you unpick things like this, I think it's quite shocking and alarming probably how far away we are in terms of, you know, supporting the individual and making them enjoy it more, and ultimately allowing them, you know, like you said, you know, if you create a great person, a great human being, they will achieve, you know, regardless of whatever that avenue is, whatever that outlet is, whether it's football, playing the violin, they'll excel in life, And football will just so happen to be one aspect of their life, which I never quite thought about it in that much depth, in that much detail. Yeah, I've kind of, you develop the human being and yeah, you've got the, you give them the best chance and unboxing their potential. But I never actually thought it, about that, and you really deconstructed it excellently there in terms of, well, it shouldn't have to be just, okay, well, let's just concentrate on this bit and then that bit and all the multi different various identities a person has, not just as an academy player. And yeah, it's, yeah, it outstands me sometimes of how probably far away we are and how all these things kind of will impact on them. But I suppose, simply put, like you said, if you're passionate and you focus on the emotional side of thing and not just the mental strength and the mental aspect, you're unboxing their potential, you're helping that human being to be the best version of themselves,
yeah,
they will go on to be a success. And if it just so happens to be as in academy football, as a professional football player, then that will be almost a byproduct of it, rather than just, oh, let's really focus and drill down to unbox their potential in football, forget everything else. That's not clearly what you're saying. And yeah, that's a game changer for me. Each episode we end with a final question, a final word, a final quote, a piece of advice from yourself. What would that be? Would that be something similar to what we've talked about in the last 50, 55 minutes or so? Or is there another bit of words of wisdom you want to provide our listeners with to leave in their ears as they listen to this podcast?
Yeah, I think it would be to believe in yourself, but not just to say that I believe in myself, but to really feel it. You know, you feel like, yeah, I do really believe in yourself. And if you don't yet, great that you notice it. There's something you can do about it. And you just ask why. You just ask of yourself why. And if you need any support with that, then ask somebody that you trust to help you unbox that ultimately. Because behind that is your potential. And when you have no interference to your potential, your performance comes out of it. So that is how, you know, well-being is at the foundation and is the only sustainable foundation to high performance. It truly does let you perform at your best level on and off the pitch.
Brilliant. That's a great way to end the episode. It's been great to talk to you. I know we've connected it previously before recording this podcast, and yeah, it's just a shame I couldn't click record on that one as well. And I'm sure we can unpick plenty more if you'll join us next season in season four to talk about, like I said, I feel so far away of being able to kind of come up with some of the solutions or yeah, to kind of correct some of the problems at the moment. It'll be great to have you on next season to really drill down in some more specific areas. And yeah, I just want to thank you on behalf of myself for taking the time out of your day, and on behalf of our listeners, I know, even not just the last bit that you just left them with, but everything over the last 55 minutes they will be taking plenty from. So thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Lee. It's always a pleasure to chat, and yeah, really happy to share what I can.
Unpick that one. Simon has given you plenty to think about in those 60 minutes, and just an insight into his experiences as an academy player, as well as those of some current players too. Plenty of highlights, but some lowlights in there also. Self-sabotage is a common trait within all sports, not just football. The ability to see the bad even when things are going good. Negative self-talk can take over you, consume you, and begin a rapid downward spiral into even new depths. Emotion is often overlooked and often misunderstood. As Simon stated, it is energy leaving the body, a physical expression of how we are thinking, feeling, and ultimately behaving. Vulnerability is strength. Let that sink in. Don't see it as a weakness. This is where the magic happens, where progress is made, and where you really find out about yourself. Love being you and follow your own path. And our path takes us to next week's episode and yet another interview from the locker. Thanks for listening to this week's episode, and we hope you have taken many key messages away with you. But the next part is down to you now, by putting these into action. If you'd like today's episode, feel free to tell us on our various social media platforms, where you can find us at @thelocker_UK. For guest recommendations, future topics to be discussed, or you simply want to reach out, you can do so by emailing us on thedevelopmentlocker@gmail.co.uk. Remember to share this episode and our platform with your teammates, friends in football, or anyone you feel would benefit from it. So, what are you waiting for? But you're not done yet, as we look forward to seeing you next week when we bring you another interview from the locker.